Ahoy there!
Ahoy there! Was I listening to a little bit of birdsong there?
Oh, yes.
I can hear the singing. The time of the singing of birds has come. The voice of turtle is heard in our land again. Sorry.
A little bit. Through my open window in Chingford.
Oh, Chingford. You can hear. I forgot. There are a couple of
sweet
birds.
Chingford.
Yes, a couple of there birds are. In Chingford. There are. Are they Are they in a cage? Your neighbours, I think, I seem to remember, had a cage with some birds on their balcony next
she
to yours.
She kept chaffinches.
She did, in a cage.
Do I mean chaffinches? Yes, chaffinches. The little... I think she probably wanted budgerigars, but, you know, everything's on a budget here.
Well, you get what you can in Chingford, I think.
Yes, exactly.
Yes. I could do you a couple of cheeky marmosets.
That's probably at your end.
What is happening at my end? My end is very quiet. I can see the... Sorry, it's going to sound awful. I can see the backsides of Cora and Kerry down in the borders below.
Oh.
They're weeding and putting in... So there's some plants that have been growing out in the hothouse are now being put out into the borders. Clearly, somebody thinks it's going to get warmer soon, which is a promising thought.
So what are they doing? They're in the green hat. They're in the... Where are they exactly? Where is it?
No, they're in the borders.
In the borders.
I can see that there's some pinks on the edge of the border, and nestling, peeping out from between the pinks, a couple of quite workmanlike backsides. Sorry, that sounds terribly... I don't mean, you know, but when I say workmanlike, what I mean is I'm not ogling them. That's what I'm trying to convey.
Yes,
I'm not. I am not looking at them in anything other than a sort of... in the way one might look back at a... step back and admire a steam engine. Think, oh, look at that. Look at that industry. Look at it working. Look at that.
They're a traction engine.
Chuff, 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 chuff.
Yes.
A sort of traction. Very, very, very good to see proper... workman. Sorry, I don't know. I'm drawn to. I seem to have been drawn straight into buttocks. I didn't mean to land straight on that. How are you? What was your? It's not really important how you got here in this make believe world, but it seems to be a little convention. So let's nod towards it. How did you get here in this make believe world, Craig?
Do you know how I got here, Martin? I surfed down the dunes.
Oh.
How about that?
Oh, I like that.
How about that? I surfed the dunes. So that wonderful, you see these wonderful drifts, these sand drifts we've got here towards the the upper reaches of the valley. Yes, so I just crested that little...
Down you came.
That little hillock there, and down I came.
Actually, now I look at you in my mind's eye. You've got sort of surfery, salt-bleached... curls.
Yes.
That's how I'm seeing you.
It's a bit of a surfer vibe.
Yes.
And yes, sort of Breton t-shirt. Breton shirt.
Yes, and a sort of coral necklace.
Yes, coral necklace. Knee-length denim. They were jeans once, obviously. Sawn-off jeans.
Sawn-off.
And bare feet. Here I am, surfing down the dunes.
Look. You've got a little... I guess it's more little coral things around one of your ankles there, little anklet.
That's right, yeah.
I've never noticed that before in my mind's eye.
No, well, there you are. That's how I adorn myself when I catch the big one.
Yes.
What about...
Big dune. Yeah.
What about you, Martin? How did you wend your way?
I get here? I came in a mini moke. Actually, also, there we go.
Ooh,
also
another
little surfer vibe. Yes,
I love those.
I came bouncing over the sand dunes. Must look at that suspension, actually. Yes, I notice a couple of my figurative petrol cans have fallen off on the way, so I hope I don't run out of fuel on my way back to Dunnor. But yes, how very, very good it is to be with you here.
It's wonderful. I must say, Martin, I'm very excited this week because of course, everything's opening up, which is wonderful.
Isn't it?
And things are sort of opening up for me creatively as well. Have you heard of something called the Artist's Way? Have you heard of that?
The Artist's Way. Tell me more. Maybe I have. Maybe I haven't.
It's a book. It's not a new book.
No.
I put it at a certain vintage, actually.
Yes.
20 years, possibly more. And it's a book. It's like a workbook. You work through it. And they give you something to do every day. And what you do is you have your own artist. You create your own artist and you look after them. And the artist is that creative part, I've just had such a ruddy breakthrough, I can tell
is it
you.
It's a part, the artist you create is within you. Is
within you, yes, exactly. So you birth your artist.
Yes.
And then you nurture your artist.
Yes.
You feed your artist. Mm. And then you lock your artist up in a back room and put it to work. Well, mine has, I'll tell you, my artist is really cranking out some extraordinary sandwich reviews, I've got to say, because I've had a bit of a dry spell. Since the incident. I can't name the company. It's a very, very big company who took me on to basically completely reinvent their sandwich descriptions for it was in Belgium. And I really got my fingers burned, Martin, as you know. You know, I put a lot of effort into that.
Oh, you did. A lot of eggs in that basket, didn't you?
And, you know, in the end, I found myself, you know, trying to...
Cast out.
Well, my artist was...
Despised, loathed.
Yeah, despised. It was kind of... My poor little artist was weeping.
Oh,
it was like...
Yes. That's when artists are at their best, though, isn't it? They love a weep.
Well,
they're up against the wall. It's where art needs to be. Obviously, if it's a painting up against the wall, it's kind of the best place for it to be. But also for an artist to be up against the wall is also a good thing, I think. Isn't it? Isn't that where necessity, the mother of invention, or some relation of invention? Anyway, I'm not sure.
Well, it would appear so, because this is just flowing out of me. Martin. So. You know, today.
What did you do with the artist's way? I mean, what's the way been?
The artist's way is this. This is the journey, Martin. This is where I'm, you know, it's like saying,
yes.
You know, this is the vessel into which I pour my creative soul. The artist's way.
Oh, so, I see. Yes.
And I have to say, I've come up with a pretty. I mean, do you know a sandwich called a sabiche? You ever heard of that?
I mean, like a ceviche. Is it a raw fish cured in lime juice, maybe?
Similar. Yes. So we got, I believe it's an Iraqi. It's an Iraqi sandwich originally. It's kind of like an open sort of flatbread sandwich. You've got some hard-boiled eggs in there. You've got some sliced onion, maybe a bit of eggplant.
Yes, it's literally nothing like what I said. Nothing like a ceviche.
Well, no, you could...
So, literally, when you said yes... What you really meant was, are you talking about?
No, it's the one you're spelling begins with a C, doesn't it?
That one? C, yes. Yeah.
So this one begins with an S.
Oh, goodness. I couldn't have got the wronger end of the stick.
And
the fuzzy end of the lollipop there.
Anyway, I've written a description of this sandwich. I think it's ruddy dynamite.
Go on, tell you. Can you read it out, or is that sort of under contract?
This is obviously just off the top of my head, just sort of praising what I wrote this afternoon, but it was something like a delicious light feta cream nestling between two plump, hard-boiled yolks.
That's literally what I'm looking out at the border right now. That is exactly what I can see. Sorry, on you go. In a, like a locomotive. Oh, it's like Stevenson's rocket down there.
Yes, exactly.
There it is.
Yes, exactly. Mm. Does Keir Starmer ever wear a neckerchief? I imagine Cora wears a neckerchief, doesn't she? I mean, Cora does look like, she is the one that looks like Keir Starmer, right?
She looks a bit like Keir Starmer. I have seen her in a neckerchief. I think later in the summer when the midges, we're prone to midges here in Herefordshire from time to time, and I think that's when she gets the neckerchief on, just to make sure they don't venture anywhere below the neckline. Everything I say about her now sounds objectified and sort of, sorry. Luckily, she doesn't listen to the podcast. But anyway, you know what I mean.
It's very difficult to say. How does one describe the female form in a way that doesn't sound offensive? It doesn't sound offensive. I mean, there's a very good example of this. Did you see in the news they've brought... There's this quite monstrous creation. It's a giant statue of Marilyn Monroe.
Oh, I did see that from The Seven-Year Itch.
Exactly, the Billy Wilder film.
I didn't really see what that was about. What was it about?
So it's a colossal, colossal statue. And a few years ago, I think it was sent on its way from Palm Springs by some rather irate locals. Anyway, it's found its way back there, and apparently it's going to now be, it's now going to be a permanent fixture there. And this thing is absolutely colossal. It's 26 feet tall. She's wearing the white dress.
God heavens. Yes.
But what's really caused a ruckus in Palm Springs is the fact that she's positioned so that when you exit the rather reputable Palm Springs Museum, you emerge sort of between her legs, inevitably.
Oh, for goodness sake. You see that? There all isn't there a metaphor there? There's a metaphor for life in these days. You see, in the two dimensions of the film, you saw just what you saw. Now, of course, every these things have to be embodied and made large, and that necessarily means, from certain angles, there'll be nothing left to the imagination as far as her.
Absolutely her, nothing. Well, of course, in the film, you don't see it. You don't see anything. I mean, she just walks. You know, they're coming. I think they're walking down a high street, aren't they? And the subway train is going underneath the grill, and Marilyn Monroe says, "Ooh, good, that feels nice." And there's a shot of her with her sort of skirts billowing. From the waist up, and then there's a shot of her legs. You never see anything in between, and then the man's being sort of rather coy, sort of pretending it's not happening. Yeah, trying to look elsewhere, and then another train goes under as they have their conversation. She sort of enjoys the moment. How can you put it? If one finds it erotic, what one finds erotic about it is. And believe, I'm as red-blooded as the next man, Martin, as you know.
Of course. Oh, well, I know that. I mean, oh, my goodness me. The sap courses through you. And the red blood, of course.
When I see a sort like Marilyn Monroe, I am champing at the bit, I tell you. I am absolutely champing at the bit.
Okay,
sorry, I can't help it. I can't help it. I'm so red-blooded.
Yes.
I'm so...
Is it sort of cinematic Viagra for you?
Yes, exactly. It's just like... I was chewing the leg
knuckles.
Of the armchair when I was watching that. Chewing my knuckle. Let me at her, I was saying. I have to say, the actual clip itself is it's not innocent. It's the opposite of innocent, but it is not explicit either.
Well, yes,
everything is implied. Everything
indeed.
Is completely
the, what
implied.
Is explicit is implicit. You see, it's all in, sort of left to the imagination. You see, I mean, you know how with Playmobil characters, there's certain bits that are just filled in. You know.
Yeah.
There's no delineation between the front of the foot and the heel of the shoe. Where in a Playmobil foot, it just goes flat.
True.
You might imagine that in a similar way, there's perhaps, for dignity's sake, they might have just sort of solidified from the around the hem of the dress, and it would all just be slightly disappointing, just filled in plastic. I don't know what the statue's made of. They call it statue. Statue. Is it really a statue, or is it more like just a model made of plastic?
Yes.
Or is it crafted? Is it crafted by an artisan, I wonder, with a chisel and a how-de-do?
I think what's really tragic is the reason it's there, of course, is just so that people can take selfies in front of it. I mean, this is where we sort of got to. I mean, you've got to, you know, in order to be able to take a selfie, you know, with the right composition, you need to have a 26-foot-high statue. So let's just stick one right in the middle of Palm Springs. It doesn't matter what anyone else thinks who lives in Palm Springs. As long as people have got something to take selfies with. And of course, one of the big debates is, you know, where's the proof? You know, where's the proof that this giant monstrosity is going to increase footfall in Palm Springs? There is none. The whole thing
Who
is
knows?
As virtual as it gets.
Well, it brings a very, very vivid issue to life, doesn't it? In the form of statuary, and who is to decide which of the human forms should be made large and projected into communities?
An interesting question, isn't it? Is it sexist, Martin? Is it sexist to put that statue in the middle of Palm Springs?
I don't know if it's sexist, is it? I mean, you might argue it was sexist not to put it in there.
I'm
scratching my chin at this point.
Because?
You can't see. Wow.
Because
she was a great iconic figure, and this shows her in one of her most famous cinematic moments. There she is, to be coy about that and draw a veil over her importance, her iconography, might be to rub out, to erase some of her power and her importance in the culture.
Although when she was, you know, at her peak in culture, she wasn't appearing as 26-foot high statues.
Well, she wasn't, but she was
dresses you could stare up.
No, but she was undoubtedly a sex symbol, though, wasn't she?
Yes, yeah.
In the era in which she was very famous, that was and world famous, she was.
I can't say I feel in two minds about the statue. I hate it, but
yes, it's the sort of sister statue to that Freddie Mercury statue that used to be on top of the portico at the Dominion Theatre.
The Dominion Theatre, yes, the gold one.
The gold one,
wasn't it gold?
Outside, We Will Rock You.
Yes,
and then it was decided by I can't remember who that it should be put up in the street in Kensington where Freddie Mercury lived, and not unsurprisingly, quite a number of the citizenry of that street in Kensington were up in arms and said, well, no, this is a monstrous thing. If we're going to have it in our street, I think we should have perhaps some agency in the statuary of our neighbourhood.
It's interesting, isn't it?
Yes.
But that image now, it feels a lot more charged and risque. I mean, I remember when that... what must I have been, 10 years old, watching telly, and that film was on one day, and my mum saying, oh, come and look at this, it's Marilyn Monroe, she's going to stand on this. I mean, it was like it was the most sort of,
the
natural thing in the world.
Yeah, oh, I see, exactly. Yes.
Oh, look, there she is, you know, that's that. Oh, this is very famous, you'd watch this bit. There was no sort of judgment in it. Now, it feels like a very potent symbol.
I don't know. I look forward to the day. I don't know. It may not happen in our lifetimes, but it will happen at some point, I dare say. This Puritanism will, the wheel will turn again and people will rediscover their sense of joy and humanity. As a red-blooded fellow, and I know you are as red-blooded as the next man, Craig.
I am.
Do you find that you therefore have to suppress your natural attraction to the female form in any form it might take?
I've always had to do that, Martin. I've always had to do that because, you know, I'm a
red-blooded man.
I was very red-blooded.
Red-blooded as the next man. Yeah.
I'm just so red-blooded,
yes,
that
yes,
it's like a rag to a bull, the feminine form.
Yes.
To me.
Yes.
Because I'm as red-blooded as the next man.
Oh, yes, you are. Look at you. Dripping in testosterone. What else has been catching your eye, Craig?
Well, there was the whole Paul McCartney eye yoga story. That was quite intriguing.
I did see that. Yes, tell me about that.
Now, I've always thought Paul McCartney had very flexible eyes. If I picture the Beatles,
yes,
it's quite often with Paul, with that sort of funny guitar he had. It looked a bit like a violin.
Yes, yes, didn't it?
He's sort of standing legs akimbo. He's got his head sort of on one side, and his eyes are looking straight up in the air.
His eyebrows about 3 inches above his eyes.
His eyebrows amazing. About perfect semicircles, about 3 inches above his eyes. Hair that looks like he's sat under one of those old fashioned hair drying machines.
Oh yes,
You know that he's sort of put, I don't know, maybe put curlers in it and sat for sort of 3 hours and. In some sort
put
of
curlers in his hair and about £2.50 in the meter. Just sat
yes.
down under the hairdryer.
Just
lovely.
pay for the lecky. But his eyes pointing straight up and his mouth going woo. That's pretty much
that's,
how I.
That's him. Yes, you've got him. You've got him in a little thumbnail.
So, you know, it's sort of cheating for Paul McCartney to do eye yoga, isn't it? I mean, he's got the most flexible eyes in the business.
What is eye yoga, though? What does it stimulate? I mean, I'm familiar with yoga, but the eye itself doesn't really do very much, does it?
No.
It's the muscles that move the eye.
I think it stimulates the bank balances of people who teach eye yoga. I think that's what it does. But if you want to know what some of the moves are, well, here we go.
Yes. Go on.
Yes, so here's a few of the moves. You can do these yourself. The listener could do this. herself or himself, yeah, as they listen along. So here's one, the figure of eight. So look, you look straight ahead, okay?
Yes.
And then you move your eyes in a figure of eight.
Oh, I'm doing that now.
You trying that? Ooh. Have you tried that?
Oh, I'm feeling very sleepy.
Yeah, so like a figure of eight.
Yes, it's turning into more like a sort of Extinction Rebellion sign is what I'm doing.
Extinction Rebellion, a bit like, yes, it's a bit like the gesture you make when you're 14 and your mother tells you to tidy your bedroom. That's,
I tell you, if I asked someone to tidy their bedroom and they made this face, well, I can't really see it, but I think I'd get onto the social. I think get them looked at by a specialist.
And the next one is blinking. That's your next move. So you just blink.
I do that without even thinking, you know.
Blink a lot.
Without thinking.
Blink, yes, blink, 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 blink.
Oh, I see a lot of blinking.
A lot of blinking. There we go. Blink, 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 blink.
Yes, I'm doing that. Blink, 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 blink. Again, that's, yes.
Yes, this is eye yoga. This is what we're doing. And then the last one. You take your hands, and yes, you know Vic and Bob used to do that thing where they slap their thighs and then they rubbed them a lot.
Oh, yes. Yes.
Often though, they were in keen anticipation of the arrival of Ulrika Johnson.
And
they would slap their thighs and they just rub them a lot until they were really warm. So you do that. You do that, and then you put your hands on your eyes.
Oh, I do that quite often.
To warm them up a bit.
I don't rub them, but oh, that's nice. Very comfortable. Very nice.
And those are a few of the. Oh, sorry, there is one other one. There's another one. I forget.
Oh, yes, go on.
Another one where you look at something far away.
Oh, yes.
I'm sort of staring at a wall, so it's quite difficult for me.
I'm once again looking at the backside of Cora like a sturdy generator or something creating power.
Yes. So now you could look at something in the middle. You know, close to you. You know,
Diesel.
So.
Diesel, maybe. I think. Sorry. Miles away there. Sorry, I'd say yes. Sorry.
So now you can look at something close.
Yes.
Yeah. Now look at something about halfway between those two.
Yes. Okay. I'm looking at a statue. I've got a statue of Pan halfway along the border.
Oh, that's nice.
Statue of Pan. So I'll go from the finger to Pan to the backside. That. Oh, yes. All right. Okay.
If I had a dream with those three things in, I'd
also get onto social, probably.
Yes, I would also get onto social. Yes. So that's just exercising, obviously,
your right, your
you know, whatever muscles there are in the
eyes,
your eyes
that
help you look at things far away and close up.
Yes.
So that'd be the fourth component of eye yoga. And the idea is that this will give you this will give you 20/20 vision. Yeah, make you have young.
Well, I can see
young eyes.
People often used to talk. I remember once somebody talking about stretching your eyes. How good it is to get out and look at the far distance and stretch your eyes. Well, actually, that doesn't really feel like a stretch. Whereas looking at something very close, particularly as we get older, of course, and our vision tends to sort of long sight. I think that does feel like that's the nearest thing to a sort of, you know, to a bicep curl in terms of actual effort. And then looking far away is just easy. That's a walk in the park.
I'm at the stage now where there is no part of my vision that actually works. I actually have to wear three pairs of glasses.
Trifocal.
Not all the time. No, I just have three pairs of glasses that I sort of alternate between.
Very interesting.
If it's also a sunny day, and I've got to have, I need six pairs of glasses because I've got to have the.
Of course, yes, you've got to have the sunglass version.
It's very complicated. Oh, it's very complicated. I mean, it is, Martin, an administrative nightmare.
You could have them all hanging around your neck on different coloured threads. You could have all the colours of the rainbow. Then people could decide for themselves. Either you were supporting Pride or the NHS, because the rainbow would sort of weave in a rather rainbow-like way around your neck.
Yes, or I'm some sort of troublesome character like John McCruick.
Talking of lots of glasses, this week, of course, has seen the grand reopening of restaurants and pubs.
Yes.
And all of that. And the theatres and the concert halls, they're all open again. Have you been out in Chingford? Have you been enjoying the cafe atmosphere, the great boulevardier that is Craig Children? Have you been out striding down and enjoy siping up the atmosphere? I don't know. How has it been in London Town?
No, I haven't been. I haven't been out. I went. I got the dates slightly wrong.
Ah.
And on, when was it, Saturday, I popped down to Cafe Nero, just like I popped my head around the corner.
Yes.
And, you know, just cop a little bit of the buzz, catch a bit of the vibe.
Yes.
Yeah. I was told, no, you've got to come back on Monday. Nobody can sit in today. You've got to come back on Monday.
Oh,
and to be honest, Martin, I've been so rushed off my feet writing these. I mean, I've had such a kind of, it's been like, you know, Picasso's Blue period, just sort of dashing off these beautiful yes. descriptions of oh, sandwiches yes. inspired by the artist's oh. way that I haven't actually had a chance to get down. Where have you been? Have you checked anything out? What's happening? What's happening
well,
out there?
We went into Ludlow, which is our local market town, and that's a thriving foodie centre, which is very exciting. Sadly, of course, everywhere was booked up months ago.
Of course,
it'll be November apparently before we can get a look in at the Champignon Sauvage in Ludlow. But that's all right. That's all right. We'll look forward to that. But yes, I haven't really been taking advantage. But I was told by somebody that apparently in order to save our poor catering and hospitality industry, every man, woman and child has to drink 124 pints. They didn't say what of, but I'm guessing beer. I suppose beer or maybe cider. I don't know. That's an awful lot. Not in one sitting, you understand. You know, we're not all William Hague. But
is it an awful lot though? I mean, over the course of the summer.
Well, if you were to do it in 10 days, that'd be 12 pints a day. If you were to do it in 20, it'd be 6. Yeah, if you do it in 40, it'd be 3. I mean, you know.
But you've got about 90. You've got about 90 days in over the course of the summer.
You're absolutely right.
It's only drinking like a pint or two. Come on, guys, you can do that. You can do that.
You're right.
I don't think that's going to be any problem.
We can do this.
That's going to be any problem. We can do this, Martin.
Let's do this.
Shoulder to shoulder.
Yes.
Shoulder to shoulder, we can
blow the froth right.
off something yes. yeasty and save. Yes. And save the hospitality industry.
Save the world
industry.
Of hospitality. That's right, yes.
I think it's well within our grasp, actually, 124 pints. I saw that statistic as well. Rather helpfully, it said, or 122 glasses of wine. Who is?
Hang on. They're confusing saving the hospitality industry with recommended drinking levels, aren't they? That's just units. That's not saving anything at all. That's... Apart from lots of quite angry French people.
Well, I'm a non-drinker, Martin, as you know. I don't drink. I don't know how many.
I once saw you after you'd drunk a... You'd,
I had a shandy top, didn't I, when we were at...
Well, was it? I thought,
Sounds of the City Festival in Leeds, remember?
That I do, yes. You had a shandy top. You
I was all
were,
over the shop.
If I said you were anyone's, you were just... Yeah,
I'm always anyone's because I'm so red-blooded.
Well, that's true, yes.
Well, anyone who's female, obviously.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. Anyone could have... literally anyone who's... Yes.
I was absolutely pasted.
Pasted like a red-blooded drunk. Oh, my goodness.
I was just hanging. The next day, I was absolutely hanging.
Oh, I remember. You're in a filthy mood.
Yeah, I'm not sure I trust these statistics. 124 pints or 122 glasses of wine, 976 packets of crisps, or 40 roast dinners.
Why is there only two difference? You know, the difference only two between pints of beer and glasses of wine.
I just don't understand.
Someone's literally just made that up. Literally made it up.
It's literally nonsense.
Oh, it's nonsense.
Anything else on your horizon, Martin?
Well, I did see that the Guardian newspaper was marking 20 years since the release of the film Shrek.
Oh,
by saying it was a terrible film. They didn't like it at all. They didn't like it, not a little bit. They thought it was a...
an affront.
They thought it was an affront, is what they thought, yes. This was a piece written by Scott Tobias, and, you know, saying that it was unfunny, overrated, and I think terribly cynical. And actually, I do wonder if there isn't something in that. I'm not sure I ever particularly adored Shrek. It came out around about the time when Pixar was very much still at the very, very top of its game. And there was immense charm to Pixar.
It's a DreamWorks film, isn't it, Shrek?
Good heavens above.
No, but that was the thing. That was the point. You know, Pixar was very much in the ascendancy. But this was a kind of... this was peak DreamWorks, wasn't it? This is when they suddenly had a...
It was peak DreamWorks.
They suddenly had a shot.
But I think it had a sort of sass about it. And it had a kind of... It was all a bit... It was what my dear old mama would have called vulgar. It was a bit vulgar.
Didn't Mike Myers play? Doesn't he play Shrek? He played
the character of Shrek. That's right. As a Scot.
As a Scot. With a
not entirely unbelievable Scottish accent, in fact.
He does a very good Scottish accent, doesn't he?
Yes.
I think he had a Scottish character called Fat Bastard. I mean, I only laugh because. That just seems completely ridiculous now. It seems like something that never happened. But I think, yes, I think it's a character like that called Fat Bastard. I'm not sure you'd get away with that now. But anyway.
I don't think you would. No.
And I think Eddie Murphy is the donkey.
I think it was all full of star power. A lot of quite high-octane star power. High on star power, low on charm. I think that seems to be. I have some sympathy with what Scott Tobias is saying there.
I think only in so much that Shrek, for me, sort of represents yet another click on the lamentable continuum of the undarkening of fairy tales. That's the. Used to be that fairy tales and Disney ones, gosh, they used to be so scary. I remember seeing, Snow White when I was. I must have been like 8, 9.
Absolutely
scared
terrifying.
Me half
terrifying.
To death.
Oh,
half to
yes, it
death.
Would have done. It
when
would have done.
She's climbing that. Oh, there's lightning flashing and this crone is climbing.
I remember
being
even before the crone. Just the
terrifying.
Woods, the dark woods, the trees seem to have fingers and arms that suddenly reached out.
They used to be terrifying. They used to be absolutely horrific.
Yes,
you know, people
yes.
having their fingers cut
yes.
off and... Eaten
yes.
by dogs and, you know,
yes.
I mean, all kinds of stuff. I mean, the further back you go, the more depraved they are.
Useful, you see. They were so fascinating to the young.
Well, wonderfully.
We want to know about the terrors. We want to feel that little part of that little dark edge of our consciousness has been stimulated. We want to feel that. We want to know.
Well, not only that, but
like.
but in childhood, the psyche is coalescing. Of course, you know. So
of course,
so what
yes.
are what are stories other than, you know, representations of ourselves and. And the child knows keenly that he is not yet the master of his own thanatos. He's not yet the master of his own destructive impulses.
Yes.
And this is what the fairy tale does. It manages to personifies
right.
and gives control yes. to those destructive influences. It's very important. They're very important stories, very important for children, very important for adults as well. You see, I'm sure you could tell me the story now of Rumpelstiltskin, Hansel and Gretel, Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs. I bet you couldn't tell me what the story is of any of the Shrek movies.
Absolutely no idea. No
Absolutely
idea at
no
all.
Idea. None of us have. None
whatsoever.
Of us have. None of us had any idea what they were, even after we'd just watched them.
No, and also fairy tales, through their sort of oral tradition, I suspect, go right back to the very origins of our species. You know, these are the tales with which generations, I mean, millennia.
Countless, thousands of
people
generations,
have been
yeah.
entertained and, I suppose, educated around fires. The fires they existed on. You know, that was what was told and what was passed on. It was the wisdom of the ancients, you might say, in all its unpalatableness and in all its glory as well. So many archetypes celebrated there, so many aspirations, so much of what is common to all of us is passed on through these tales in the bardic tradition. And yet we end up with sort of fart gags from a rather ugly green ogre. Do you know what? Kerry and Cora, they've barely moved. I might have to go out and just check, that really is them. Yes, it is. It's definitely them. I know that denim and that sort of expanse of lower back I've seen before. Yes. Well, I may therefore be
perhaps
time.
You better go and check up on them.
I might just go and check they're all right. Make sure that everything's good down in the on the borders. So yes, maybe it's possibly time for us to say dehoy.
Dehoy, dehoy indeed, Martin. I shall go. I shall apply myself to the tedious job of climbing back up this dune, carrying this enormous surfboard.
Oh, I could give you a ride in my mini moke if you like.
Oh, thank you so much. Yeah, great.
Surf bro. Yes.
Off we go, bro.
Maybe we could stop off at the beach, the beach bar over there, and knock off maybe two or three of our recommended daily glasses of wine.
Hold me back. Hold me back, bro.
Okay, in you come, red-blooded fellow. Right.
Yeah, perhaps there'll be some wenches in there we might chatsome with.
Absolutely. Well, yes, maybe. Yes, steady.
You've been listening to Time Ghost. Time Ghost was created by Alexander Armstrong and Ben Miller. It was produced by Andy Goddard and Diggory Waite, and the exec producer was Claire Broughton. Time Ghost is a Hattrick podcast. You can now follow Time Ghost on Instagram. Just search @TimeGhostPod.